Thanks for listening to the program on Tuesday, November 20th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the executive suite, talking to leaders, as we do every week in this series, at the very highest levels of the federal government. And today going into the executive suite at the National Science Foundation to talk to Eugene Hubbard. Gene, it's great to see you. Thank you for coming in today.
I greatly appreciate being here.
Happy to have you. We have released the results of our Chief Human Capital Officer survey, as we do every year. And you participated in the survey, and thank you for doing that.
I did, and it was a pleasure.
And thank you for being here to talk about the results. Whenever we release one of these, we like to get somebody from the community to come in and talk to us about what they see here. First of all, tell me about being the Chief Human Capital Officer in an agency like NSF. It is a smaller agency, of course, and I imagine that being the CHCO is not the only thing they have you doing.
No, I actually do quite a few other things, as a matter of fact, broad responsibilities, but probably the one I take most to heart and most seriously is the CHECO role. And it's the one where I feel responsible for the employees at NSF. Their work environment, their morale, their development, et cetera. So it's a great job. NSF is a wonderful agency. I've only been there about 10 months, so I'm still kind of learning the ropes there, learning the culture. But as far as I'm concerned, it's probably one of the best places to work with an extremely dedicated workforce there.
Where'd you come from before that?
I was with the Navy for 4.5 years, so the Naval Facilities Engineering Command. And before that, I've done a couple other agencies. Before that, I was with NOAA, and before that, with NASA for about 4.5 years.
So you have a background in these areas with other agencies. What's the difference at an agency like NSF that really serves a niche mission compared to some of the other cultures that you've been in?
So NSF is fairly unique in the business that it does. It's a grant-making organization. About a budget of about $7 billion, but most of that money goes straight out to fund science, engineering, mathematics, and education research. So we operate with a very low overhead. We're about 5%. I'm one of the 5%. I'm part of that overhead over at NSF. But that makes it fairly unique. Most of the other agencies I've been at have been more mission agencies where they actually do a lot of what they are responsible to do. NSF, we're really looking at trying to find and fund the best cutting-edge research that they can. And really, in a way, the research they fund impacts the entire world. I'm just every day I'm amazed at what our program officers and program directors do at NSF.
How does that difference in the mission and the structure of the agency make a difference in the way that you build and maintain a workforce of people?
Right. So it's very challenging at NSF. Our primary workforce is what we call the STEM research, the scientific, technology, engineering and mathematics workforce, highly competitive workforce. Also, I think there's just not enough of them out there. So, and we compete, of course, against some of not only the other agencies like NASA, NOAA, and the Navy and Department of Defense, Homeland Security, et cetera. We also compete against the universities and the other academia, other organizations, and private industry. So what we do is a lot of our workforce actually come from the universities, and they're there temporarily. I'd say about 20% to 25% of our workforce are what we call rotators. And we get them from the universities on Intergovernmental Personnel Act or other authorities. They come to NSF for 2 to 4 years, again, really focus on the science and engineering, and then they'll go back to their home universities and take that experience back with them from NSF.
What is that like, knowing that you have a built-in churn that you're going to have to continue to, you know, prime the pump, so to speak?
Right. It causes some challenges with the human resource and how we build our professional development at NSF. It's kind of a continuing learning curve. You know, we bring in new people all the time. We have to teach them that, hey, they do coming over to NSF, which has a fairly academic culture, but by the way, you are still a federal agency, and now there's some rules you have to follow. But other than that, I don't see it a whole lot different. Some of the other agencies I've been in, you've either had a lot of churn with military, for example, and the Department of Defense. You get a lot of the military officers come and go fairly quickly. In some of the other agencies, it's a high level, maybe political appointees, and they tend to come and go. So I don't see it being a whole lot different. Our challenge really is finding those good people not only in the STEM areas, but also in the support areas, such as my area with human resources. Human resources are also a mission critical occupation. OPM is looking at the critical gaps that we have in human resources and several other fields along with the STEM fields.
I promised that you would come here and talk about this survey, and I do want to get to that, but I'm hearing you say some things that I think are potentially valuable to people at other agencies. I'd like to explore that, if that's all right with you. Two points in particular. You talked about the competition for STEM workers, and it strikes me that that is a broader view of the challenges that are involved there that other agencies are experiencing more narrowly in the cybersecurity field, where they're competing against private industry and academia and not just other federal agencies for workers to do that work. What are the lessons that you think your counterparts at larger agencies might learn from your experience?
So one thing we're looking at in NSF and what we do a lot, and this is on the program side, kind of outside my area, but again what the program does at NSF, and that is I think one of the things we have to concentrate on is looking at developing that career path early on. I mean down into the kindergarten to 12, the K to 12 areas. So we need to encourage our young folks to start looking at the STEM careers. And then as they build up through that, go through college and through the graduate degrees, again, a large proportion of our workforce at NSF have graduate degrees, doctorates, minimum masters. And so it's trying to build that pipeline. So we have a cadre to draw from. And not only us, but then also the ones that need it. You know, there is some, I think, internal competition with the federal government and academia, but I think it's fairly friendly, too. You know, we all know that we need these folks and the talent to move our missions forward, whether you're at a university or whether you're at DHS, DOD, NASA, any of the other federal agencies that are highly technical. Cybersecurity is definitely one of those that's going to be tough as we go through a growing area and a very important area to all, you know, to all of us as we address some of the cybersecurity issues.
You anticipated my next question, which is that competition friendly? Because I imagine there are times, no matter how friendly it normally is, where it gets a little testy. The other thing is that you said that I thought was interesting was regarding the rotators. And a lot of chief human capital officers and other HR professionals that I talk to in government are wrestling with the idea that it's not just workers in one particular area or specialty where that's going to be the case in the coming years. That's the model that a lot of young people who are entering the workforce expect over the course of their careers. They don't expect they're going to go someplace and be there for 25 years, get the gold watch, and retire as the model's been in the federal government.
Right. And as I mentioned, the rotators do present some challenges. But overall, I think it's a good thing. And I think what we try to do is really leverage that talent that they bring in for the short time that they're there. And then how do we leverage then that the dynamic between the rotators that come in and then the career civil servants that are there to support them or to support the mission and the programs of NSF, including in my area, for example, with human resources. I also have information technology under me and our admin services, all very dedicated people and all there to support the mission of NSF. Then looking at that dynamic and making sure that we can – work through any issues and challenges and leverage that new blood and the talent that the rotators bring in, I think is critical to the future.
Well, I appreciate the insight into how your job works at your agency, and because I get a chance to talk to folks at the larger agencies from time to time, and I think that you have a different perspective on how some of these issues work for a number of different reasons. So I appreciate the chance to get some insight into them. We're going to take a break here and dig into this survey in just a moment. My guest is Gene Hubbard. He is, among other jobs, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Robert Norris, Chief Architect, NGA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data in Government, Progress and Best Practices, sponsored by NetApp.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, what I see is that the intelligence community will be implementing its IT enterprise, which will allow for the sharing of data across agencies in an enhanced way. We'll see a sharing of infrastructure as far as cloud computing, networks, desktop environments.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
This is Mark Weber, President, NetApp, Public Sector. If you support a truly critical mission, The maintenance window for your storage infrastructure isn't just small, it's non-existent. If that's the case, how do you conduct upgrades, migrations, or backups without disruption? Here's the answer. Immortal Data Infrastructure from NetApp. That's always available. Then you can deliver non-disruptive operations for as long as you need your data.
We have a big
reward
just for federal employees, a wellness incentive worth up to $50. And that's just one of the extra benefits at no extra cost with the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan. You also get everything from free annual physicals to generic drug incentives. To learn about our other
rewards
and about the wellness incentive, visit extras.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Hey Ravens fans, join your friends and fellow fans and paint the town purple this season.
Fires over the middle, it's intercepted! Ray Lewis with a pick!
Celebrate Purple Fridays every week by wearing your best purple jersey, shirt, or accessory to school, work, or play on Fridays. For happy hour, head to your favorite Bill Bateman's Bistro for appearances from the cheerleaders. Find the schedule on BaltimoreRavens.com. Show your team spirit and get your purple on.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Wednesday's Federal Drive. Northern Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly talks about the fiscal cliff, federal pay and benefits, and what's ahead for government contractors. And one thing is for sure this season, travelers will have a lot of complaints about the Transportation Security Administration, even if you can bring a snow globe aboard. But how well does the agency field complaints? Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM as we explore the results of our 2012 Federal Chief Human Capital Officers Survey with Gene Hubbard of the National Science Foundation. Chief Human Capital Officers Survey was conducted just a short time ago. 41% of the respondents were from large agencies, 33% from small agencies, and 25% from cabinet-level agencies. My colleague Jason Miller helping me to get this survey done, and Jason instrumental in getting the questions put together. Two-thirds of the respondents were Chief Human Capital Officers, and the rest were deputy CHCOs. All these results are posted on federalnewsradio.com. 92% of our respondents, career employees, and the rest political employees. And Gene, Jason wasted no time in getting to the question that's on everybody's mind, not just when it comes to human capital, but everything. The first question after the demographic questions, what's the deal on budget constraints and how are they affecting your agency? 92% of your colleagues said they are. Are you seeing that in your role at National Science Foundation, and what are you hearing from your colleagues in the Chico Council meetings and so forth?
So, first of all, I'd like to know who that 8% is that's not being affected, and if they have a job open, I'm certainly willing to go there, which is a joke. I'm very happy at NSF. The budget constraints, NSF, we haven't been overly impacted yet, is the way I would put it. We do enjoy some good support from OMB and in Congress. Our budget overall has actually gone up a little bit, and we'll see what happens in the future. We are, of course, concerned about sequestration and other things coming up, but overall, our budget's done fairly well. In our operating budget, though, which does impact the salaries of employees and other services, in real terms, that has gone down, and that does cause some concerns. So we are always looking for where are the efficiencies are that we can obtain. How can we make things just to work just as well, but maybe a little cheaper? Those kind of things that we're always on the lookout. How can we apply information technology? How can we apply new efficiencies? I do shit on the Chico Council, and I look a lot at, you know, I listen all the time to this. Hey, this might be a good idea, and especially with some of the agencies that are struggling even more with the budget constraints. But I can take that back then to NSF and say, hey, you know, would that work here? Even though we are a smaller agency.
Now we hear the term "do more with less" all the time, and it's a term that I don't particularly care for, and I've said on the show any number of times. But is that a mindset that you're seeing at agencies across government in the HR field specifically?
So I'd say absolutely, and in particular NSF. So again, our budget's actually gone up in the past few years, but not the operating budget. So our staff, which is all staff at NSF, not just the HR staff, but all staff, has stayed fairly steady. Our workload has gone up tremendously, but the staff has stayed fairly steady. So that, I think that causes is some stress on the people. At the same time, they're very dedicated staff. So doing more with less, I think, is definitely something that we have been doing at NSF. At the same time, in the future, we start looking at, you know, maybe we can't do more with less. Maybe, especially in some of the support areas, we start looking at what shouldn't we be doing that we are doing now, and maybe stop doing some of that. Maybe some of the things that aren't quite so mission important.
Now, you talked a moment ago in the first segment about the rotators that you have that come to you for 2 to 4 years in your specialty areas. What about the career force that it has the potential to be there for longer? Are you starting to see the retirement wave or tsunami or whatever name somebody, catastrophic name somebody wants to attach to it? Yeah. Is that happening at NSF?
So we haven't seen a huge increase in attrition yet, including retirement. I think it is ticking up a little bit on the retirement side of things, not so much on the other normal attrition. I think right now it's one of those – it's the other old joke, of course, is the economy is our friend when the economy is like it is. But I think it's more due to, the dedication of that career workforce. A lot of them, they're not really there for the money. They're not really there just because they have a job. They're there because they're dedicated to the mission of NSF and dedicated to public service and service to their country. So but still, you know, that only goes so far when you're looking at the stress of the additional workload. I do expect – I think some of the other agencies are seeing real upticks in the retirement. Whether that retirement tsunami, which people have been predicting for years, is actually on the verge of hitting, I think it remains to be seen. If the economy improves a lot and people can retire and get good jobs and second jobs outside, then I think that we might see have a little problem there.
Now, you mentioned the difficulty, the challenge that it is to replace recruit the people for these STEM specialties. What about the career force? Are you able to find enough young or new people to come in with the skill sets that you need to replace the folks that are leaving?
So actually, we have almost the same challenge in the career force. I'm not sure it's as pronounced, but in OPM, the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, we have designated some mission critical occupancies that do have skill gaps that we've identified. HR, by the way, is one of those. Auditors and economists, kind of the ones that kind of work for our CFOs and our IGs, are another one. Information technology. We have talked a little bit about cybersecurity. They are definitely a skill gap that we have to fill. And it is getting, I think, harder and harder to find the top talent in those areas. And again, we're in competition. Even on those career civil servants and in the support fields, we're in competitions for all those professionals too. So,
in our Chief Human Capital Officers survey, Gene, we asked you and your colleagues to check all of these that apply to how the budget situation is impacting the agency. Number one answer impacts how we train employees to perform better. That didn't surprise me. I probably didn't surprise you either as a veteran of these things.
No, it didn't surprise me at all. As we kind of look at where we take the cuts that we have to take, or again, at NSF kind of in real terms as we are squeezing the budget, training is sometimes one of the ones first looked at. I've argued, I think so far successfully, at NSF, the management there is very supportive professional development. So I think it is impacting it, but right now, not to a significant degree, but still, I'm always keeping my eye on that. You know, are we spending the appropriate amount? Are we getting our folks the professional development that they need? And a lot of my focus there is on the career civil servant. So,
The second most responded question here is impacted my ability to recruit. That's the second most popular response is what I'm trying to get out of here. Yeah. And third most popular response was impacted our ability to retain valuable employees. Those are the two big pieces, I imagine, especially in an agency like yours.
They are, and again, when you look at salary freezes that we've been under, the reduction to bonus amounts, and in my mind, it goes beyond even the cash. It's the reduction to travel. You know, we're all under pressure to reduce our travel, under pressure to reduce our attendance in conferences. You know, that sometimes was an attraction to people to stay or come into the federal government. Again, I kind of then appeal to the dedication of those employees and the desire of our young employees to want to work in public service. So I may appeal a little bit more on that and the fact that, hey, I'm not going to make you rich in the federal government, but I can give you a good, solid job that will have meaning and value to you and to the public. So.
We had that 9% response again to this question that you called out in the previous question, that budget constraints haven't affected the HR operations. It would be great to know who those outliers are.
I would love to know who they are.
The sixth question specifically regards budget constraints on new employees, and let's talk about that in some detail when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Gene Hubbard. He's the Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
To successfully win and deliver on federal and state health IT initiatives, you need to align with the right strategic partners. Tech Systems Government Services offers dedicated healthcare IT teams who provide practical IT services and IT workforce management expertise to integrators in federal, state, and local governments. Each year, Tech Systems deploys nearly 6,000 specialized government and healthcare IT professionals to support the design, development, and implementation of key programs. From integrated eligibility and health exchange programs for state governments to major initiatives inside civilian and military health organizations, Tech Systems enables you to build stronger IT teams and achieve desired mission outcomes. Whether you support HHS, VA, or MHS programs or programs across all 50 states, Tech Systems' national presence and ability to assemble and manage teams of highly qualified health IT talent can help you win and successfully deliver on mission-critical programs. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com. T-E-K Systems.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2012, the trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 28th and 29th. Leading manufacturers and solutions providers will be showcasing the latest in audio-video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help you boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. See cutting-edge communications products, get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry, and network with other professionals. Visit Government Video Expo, the leading show for government video and broadcast technology, now co-located with GovCom. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit govcom2mshow.org and use the code FED. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the Audiovisual Trade Association.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Heading off arthritis. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, people can reduce their risk of the most common form of arthritis and can reduce the risk that the condition will get worse if they have it. That form is osteoarthritis, where the cartilage at the ends of bones breaks down so the bones can rub against each other. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, researcher Jennifer Hootman.
Keeping a healthy weight your entire life and avoiding injuries to the joints, such as occupation or sport and recreation-related injuries, can help lower your risk of getting osteoarthritis.
Hootman says people who have osteoarthritis can learn how to manage the symptoms, and she says being physically active, things like walking, cycling, or swimming, can reduce the pain. She also says weight training can strengthen muscle around joints. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Human Capital Management for the federal government is the most anticipated training event this year, featuring more than 30 participating federal human chief capital officers and chief learning officers. Don't miss this year's event, to be held on November 28th through the 30th, 2012, at the Sheraton Pentagon City Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Check out the website, www.hcmfederal.com, for more information and to register now. Mention code HCMF for a $200 discount.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, reviewing the results of our Federal Chief Human Capital Officer Survey 2012. My guest in studio to talk about it is the Chico at the National Science Foundation, Gene Hubbard. Gene, we talked a moment ago about the fact that the most popular response to our question about budget challenges was the impact on training. That was followed by recruiting and then retention. The next question has to do with budget restraints and how they've impacted recruitment. The most popular answer was a moderate extent, and I was struck as we asked folks about budget constraints, not just about recruiting, but also about training and retention, morale, and others. We only got the most popular answer across the board was to a moderate extent. Nobody said to a great extent. You had an interesting observation about that during the commercial break.
It primarily, I think, is because the federal government employees are fairly dedicated, and also the leadership support we have for those programs. So whether it's recruitment or training, professional development, et cetera, they are number one, at least at NSF. We enjoy a lot of support of that from our senior management. And it's, again, the dedicated employees, it's not necessarily what motivates them. So it doesn't hurt, by the way. Salary increases, bonuses, certainly something that I would advocate more of and not the freezes that we've been under. But again, I don't think that's what really motivates them. What motivates them is the work that they do, the value that work provides, and other more intrinsic things. Even such things as alternative work schedules, teleworking, et cetera, and some of those things that they might be able to do. So I think the budget has an impact on all these things. But I would agree with the survey results that it's not to a great extent. It may be more to a moderate to a lesser extent. Recruiting, as an example, what we really do is, then, if we can't spend a lot of money to recruit, then we use alternative sources. We start using more multimedia, which doesn't cost a lot. We partner with the universities or other areas that we would recruit from, some of the professional societies, et cetera. And through that, I think we can get some good recruitment done even without spending a lot of money. I think recruitment, the budget constraints do impact our recruitment primarily in being able to attract the employees, because you get some folks coming, young talent in particular, or even mid-career people looking for a new career. They might look at the federal government, especially after, what I'd call the federal employee bashing that we've kind of gone through lately. And then you'd have to ask them, why would you want to work for the federal government? And that's when you have to appeal again. The bashing aside, great employees, good employees, and great work. And that's what you need to come here for.
Has that bashing and the attitude that people seem to have toward the federal government impacted your workforce? It sounds like you have people that are doing such a specialized thing that they're really committed to. I would think maybe you would have escaped that a little bit.
So I would say yes and no. It has impacted our workforce. The rotators, maybe not so much, but the career force, absolutely. You can't. I don't think a career civil servant could help but being at least impacted. It's especially in the recent year. It's just been tough for them. So I think it does impact morale, and add that on to budget constraints and not having the ability to go to conferences and travel, not getting cash bonuses anyway. Again, we look for alternatives. There are other ways to recognize and reward good work than cash. But that only goes so far before it does impact morale. So I don't think we've escaped it at NSF. I think there's definitely morale issues that I think at least in part are caused by the general bashing of government career civil servants.
Do you get any sense of how that's working at your agency, what that dynamic is like at NSF compared to other federal agencies that might be kind of more in the spotlight and so on?
Yeah, I think avoiding the spotlight is always a good thing when it's a bad spotlight. You know, being in the spotlight when it's a good thing is always a good thing, of course. So I may have just stated the obvious there, but that's kind of the way it works, right? I don't think we're a lot different. But I mentioned the budget constraints and how they impact. You know, a lot of the other agencies, especially some of the large ones, are very labor-intensive agencies. NSF, we're not. You know, our programs do a great job in funding the research, again, with very low overhead at NSF. So I think that helps us to move some things forward, even though our budget is in a constrained environment.
It's, you mentioned earlier that your agency has a lot of bipartisan support, and your support, I imagine, also comes from all parts of the country, so it's not a geographical issue in Congress either. And I imagine that goes a long way with helping at morale, because you don't have specific members or specific committees that are on your back about specific issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far that last one.
Okay.
I think there are specific members and specific committees that are, they do provide the appropriate level of oversight to the National Science Foundation. But we are, we definitely fund research throughout the country, and that does help. But again, I think the employees, you know, they're there to support that mission, and they like the mission. It's a great mission. So I think that's, again, kind of where we kind of balance it. Again, I think that only goes so far, though. You know, eventually there are some issues there that we have to address. So.
In our Chief Human Capital Officer survey, Gene, the question 10 is, has your agency reduced the size of its workforce in fiscal 2012? This was a 50-50 split, which might be more instructive to dig down into how those workforces are shrinking, whether they're shrinking through attrition or whether they're shrinking through agency activity. What's happening at NSF, and what do you anticipate coming up over the next year or so?
So the workforce at NSF has not shrunk, and I don't anticipate it to any time in the very near future. Who knows what'll happen? You know, we're under a CR, a continuing resolution, right now. Sequestration's coming up, but I don't anticipate any reductions at NSF. So I think we're fairly fairly well positioned to continue on with our mission at NSF. I do some of the other agencies I know are under a lot more pressure than that. I was actually surprised only 50% of them had reduced in 2012. I think a lot of agencies may be trying to hold their own until they see what happens both with sequestration and with continuing resolution when it's over and we maybe finally get a budget.
Now, according to question number 12, the agencies that are planning to reduce are planning to do so mostly through attrition. That was the most popular response. VERA's early outs and VSIP's, the buyouts, were the second and third most popular responses. And my colleague Mike Causey tells me that we're now far enough along in fiscal 2012 that buyouts and early outs don't give agencies as much bang for the buck. So perhaps we'll see a slowdown in those throughout the course of the year.
That may or may not be true. Normally, the voluntary separation incentives, it takes a while to put them in place. So he's probably right that we're probably at about that situation that even if we wanted to use them or had to use them for an agency, it may already be too late to get the real bang for the buck. However, normally we say, because of the salary and what you save with the cost of it, someone has to leave around April or May to get the full bang for the buck of the separation incentive or early retirement. However, it does position you for the following fiscal year. So they're actually fairly good tools. Not only to reduce a workforce, but to also shape a workforce. I think, you know, I'm a fan of VSIP and VERA. Right now we have no plans to use them at NSF, but I have used them at other agencies, and I think they're they're an effective way to shape a workforce or reduce a workforce when necessary.
The next couple of questions on our survey deal with some of the tools that you have available to you, and we'll talk about those when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Gene Hubbard, the National Science Foundation's Chief Human Capital Officer. He's here to talk about the results of our Federal Chico Survey 2012. You can read the results and read more about my conversation with Gene at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll be back for more in just a moment.
The year was 1957. The date was October 4th, and Americans woke up to a strange new reality. The first satellite launched into space wasn't ours. The Russians had gotten there first. Sputnik 1 may have been the size of a beach ball, but it was the space shot heard round the world.
Today, a new moon is in the sky.
And it galvanized the nation into action. The Martin Company rose to meet the challenge. Then, on St. Patrick's Day, 1958, a Martin-built Vanguard rocket roared into space with a Shamrock taped to its side and put the world's first solar-powered satellite into orbit. 4 months later, the president signed the legislation that created NASA. The rest, as they say, is history. A history that is still being written by the scientists and engineers of Lockheed Martin. Their story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
Who's staying and who's going in President Barack Obama's second term? Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner have both said they're eyeing the exits, but who will fill their shoes is still up for debate. Federal News Radio's Cabinet Tracker follows the latest news on cabinet secretaries and other top-level officials that plan to leave the administration. Plus, we bring you the list of their potential replacements. It's all at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cabinet Tracker.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Dave Wintergreen, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense.
And so if you can come up with the outcome that everybody agrees to, the service level agreement or the performance measure, and it's visible to everyone, we focus and move in that direction. And the beauty of it is you can tell that you're making progress, so you can overcome the sort of, oh, it's not going to work, fear and distress. But also, if it's not exactly right, you have a chance to change course.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Gene Hubbard, the National Science Foundation's Chief Human Capital Officer, talking about the results of our Federal News Radio Chief Human Capital Officer Survey 2012. The results posted now on federalnewsradio.com. We're up to question number 13 in our survey, Gene, and 13 and 14 have to do with some of the tools that you and your colleagues have available to you. Question 13 is about HR University. How much does HR University factor into your agency's training? For human capital professionals, 45% of our respondents said a moderate extent, 36% said a limited extent. Question 14 is about Pathways, the internship program, and 50% of the respondents said 50%, the Pathways and the other internship programs are very important. We'll start with HR University. Is that a tool that you're able to use at your agency to the degree that you'd like?
Yes, it is. And I'm a big fan of HR University, and I'm very impressed that OPM was able to set that up. And with a lot of the agencies contributing, a lot of the agencies using it, I think OPM has plans to expand it, potentially working with some of the universities in town to give credit and really professionalize the human resource profession. We use a lot of our folks will attend HR University classes, take them online, et cetera. We are also trying – we have a fairly good training program ourselves at NSF, And so we're also trying to partner now with HR University, maybe have some of those as part or linked to with HR University. But I'm a big fan of it. I'd say right now we probably use it to between a limited to a moderate extent, certainly not to a great extent, but it is part of our overall program.
What would you like to see included either in HR University, or what other tools would you like to have available that would be very useful to you right now?
So one thing that OPM is looking at with some of the other agencies is potentially really moving forward with some HR graduate degrees that are specific to federal HR management. I think that would be great. Again, part of my problem with the human resource area is that the human resource specialists aren't always looked upon as professionals, sometimes not even by their own agencies, but they are professionals. So getting certificates, graduate degrees, et cetera, anything we can do to raise the perception of the human resource specialist as a professional, I think is a good thing.
The Pathways program, I mentioned half of our respondents said that it's very important to help recruit college students and recent college graduates. You mentioned that a lot of the folks at your agency have advanced college degrees. Does a program like Pathways help you in that area too, or are you working at a little bit different level?
No, it does help us in several levels. The way I'd couch it right now is internships and fellowships are very important to NSF. They're important to us in all phases of the career, both the young folks coming in and even some mid-career and even some of those with the master's and PhDs, et cetera. Pathways, I think, is a great program. I think it's too early to tell how it's working and whether it's improving things or not. But I'm looking forward to it really becoming a great tool for NSF to use to bring people in.
You see a lot of potential there, it sounds
absolutely
like.
A lot of potential for it.
The question 15, it has to do with colleges and universities, and from what you've already told me, that's a no-brainer. That's a common place for you to go and find talent.
Absolutely. We partner with a lot of them. Like I mentioned, a lot of our rotators come from them, and they actually, when they come to us, some of them on the Intergovernmental Personnel Act authorities remain actually employees of their university, and their NSF for 2 to 4 years, and we basically pay their salaries through a grant or whatever to the university. So what we do now at NSF is we have what we call the NSF Ambassador Program. So we're actually providing materials and training a lot of our rotators and a lot of our program officers and program directors, our program assistants, et cetera, to do recruiting for NSF. So when they go out to their conferences, they go out to talk science, they go out to talk engineering. By the way, while you're out there, here are some recruiting tools, and recruit folks to at least consider NSF as a good place to work.
Now, you mentioned special hiring authorities. Do you have a lot of those, and do you have the ones that you would like to have, or are there some that you'd like to get that you don't have right now?
So I think we utilize a lot of the existing ones that are federal-wide, such as especially hiring for some of our underrepresented groups, hiring for veterans and disabled veterans. We utilize those, and we've been really moving forward to try to utilize them even more. So we do utilize those that are federal-wide. We do have a couple that are, you know, the IPA, the Intergovernmental Personnel Act folks. That's not really totally unique to NSF. It's really available just by anyone, but we do use it to a great extent in NSF. We also have what we call administratively determined, or AD, positions. Those are also somewhat of an accepted hiring authority or accepted authority. They're not in the GS system, the General Services General Schedule system, but they are government employees. They are career employees, unlike the IPA Act, which are not. Are there others I would like? You know, I think the tools that we have probably meet most of our needs. I'm always open to suggestions and new ones. So if anyone came to me and said, hey, you know, we got a great new hiring authority that can really streamline things for you and get the people you need, I would jump at it.
We're getting close to the end of the survey here. The last directed question on the survey has to do with telework, and we'll talk about that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Gene Hubbard of the National Science Foundation. Our Federal Chief Human Capital Officer Survey 2012 is available now at federalnewsradio.com. Back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
We think federal employees deserve a big
extra
thanks for all their hard work. That's why at the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan, we've added benefits at no added cost, from free well child care to free immunizations. After all, you've earned them. No wonder more federal employees choose Blue Cross and Blue Shield than any other coverage. To learn more, call 1-800-411-BLUE or visit
extras.fepblue.org.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Looking for ways to help your agency help the environment? GSA has two free online resources that promote sustainability. With GSA's newly updated carbon footprint tool, you can compile your agency's annual greenhouse gas inventory and track progress toward meeting your reduction goals. And with GSA's sustainable facilities tool and green products compilation module, you can help your agency make sustainable purchasing decisions. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Introducing Stock Market Strategies, hosted by award-winning radio host Ed Handley, now every Saturday at 8:30 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Ed is the Senior Vice President of Investments and Portfolio Manager at Fulcrum Securities and is now sharing his financial and retirement planning advice for businesses and individuals on air each week. Go to edhandley.com to learn more about Ed's experience and expertise, and be sure to tune in to Stock Market Strategies Saturday mornings at 8:30 on 1500 a.m.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation, Gene Hubbard, is my guest to look at the results of our 2012 Federal Chief Human Capital Officer Survey. And one of the questions, Gene, has to do with something that you touched on earlier, and that's telework. We asked, what are your agency's priorities in its efforts to increase telework? And the most popular answer was helping managers embrace the idea of letting employees work remotely. That seems to have been the challenge with telework, is not the very highest level and not the rank and file people, but the folks kind of in the middle that are managing the rank and file and reporting to a layer or two above them. Are you seeing some progress in that at your agency?
I would say yes, we are seeing progress, and I hope to continue that progress with NSF. We have a fairly robust telework program. Most of our employees have telework agreements in place. I don't think we utilize telework as much as we could, though, and I think there are two challenges there. You mentioned the one in the survey, and I would tend to agree with that, and that is getting managers, especially those middle managers, to understand telework and how it works and that it can work. But I would disagree a little bit that it's not necessarily the rank and file, too, because I think a lot of employees are reluctant to telework for many reasons. I think sometimes they think that if they're teleworking and their colleagues aren't, that puts them at a disadvantage. Some of them are able to telework better than others, things like that. But I think sometimes getting through that, too, with the, both the middle managers and the rank and file employees on the advantages of teleworking is important as we move it forward and try to actually implement a robust teleworking program.
We have all the results for our survey posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Any of the results as you reviewed these surprised you, or that you thought were dramatically different from the responses that you gave when you took the survey, anything like that?
No, actually, I didn't find anything really surprising except for the fact there was someone that at least some that said they weren't budget constrained.
That's right.
And again, I want to know who that was. When they did talk about their progress, for example, though, some of them, you know, I think your highest rated one was improving agency union relations. And I think the NSF has made some progress there, too, and I think that's very important. And then the last one I would like to talk about just briefly is diversity and really increasing our diversity and inclusion throughout the federal government, including at NSF. I think we've made some progress there, but we also have some challenge, both with our challenges left, both in our labor management relations and our quest to increase our diversity at NSF. So those are, I think, some areas that I'll be concentrating on as the CHECO in the near future.
Anything from the survey that you thought was anything that maybe we should have asked that we didn't ask that we could put on the list for next time?
No, actually, I think the survey was pretty comprehensive for the current issues, and which are, you know, a lot of budget and morale issues and things like that. So I think that's where a lot of the challenges are. If you ask me what the future challenges are for the CHECOs, I have a long list. It would probably take you probably take more than the hour I have with you.
So. You'll have to submit that, and we'll call on you next time. We're going to put one of these together.
Sounds good.
It's been a terrific pleasure to have you. My last question for you: you mentioned earlier in the program that you spent some time at the Navy, and so I want you to fill in the phrase that follows the phrase that I'm about to give you. This is your test to see how immersed in the culture that you were. The phrase is "Go Navy."
Beat Army.
You got it exactly right.
So just so you know, I'm a Naval Academy graduate and a retired Naval officer. There's no way I'd miss Go Navy, Beat Army.
No,
that's coming up.
It's a no-brainer for you. That's right.
That's right.
In fact, you'll hear it on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Gene Hubbard, thank you very much for being here.
It's
a pleasure to
really
have you today.
I really appreciate it. It was very fun.
Gene is the Chief Human Capital Officer at the National Science Foundation, talking about the results of our Federal Chief Human Capital Officer Survey 2012. Those results posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My conversation with Gene will be up there later this afternoon, too. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.